de la lady et les doux marais.
Is it rolling, Bob?
While I was walking down the beach one bright and sunny day, I saw a great big wooden box a-floating in the bay. I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, I picked it up and ran to town as happy as a king. I took it to a guy I knew who'd buy most anything. But this is what he hollered at me as I walked in his shop. Ooh, get out of here with that before I call a cop. Ooh, get out of here with that before I call a cop. I turned around and got right out of running for my life. And then I took it home with me to give it to my wife. But this is what she hollered at me as I walked in the door. Oh, get out of here with that. And don't come back no more. Oh, get out of here with that. And don't come back no more. I wandered all around the town until I chanced to meet a hobo who was looking for a handout on the street.
He said November, he'd take most any old thing. He was a desperate man. I guess, but when I showed him the, he turned it's one of those days when we've had some sunshine, and unfortunately, I've been inside teaching all day, and when I looked out the window, I saw the light, Brian came by and said, I'm going out, I'm going to the park. I'm done. I thought, you know, I better get out of here, too. So I finished up a little bit of work, raced down to Bluffers Park, where I'm sitting now on a bench, right at the edge of the water, and just tried to catch that last bit of sun going down, but it was behind already. You couldn't see it. You could see the beautiful bright glow behind the bluffs, but the sun had already disappeared from view. But it's a nice time anyway. I managed to snap a few pictures on my nice little iPhone. I can see, I'm wondering, must be a planet that's catching all the light from the sun right now, unless it's an airplane. But that's probably not too important. You're going to hear some music on this podcast, I've got to tell you. I may even put some in the background. I may sort of do that, you know, lay this track down and then put some Phil Harris in the background. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. I know we got other things, you know, Obama's been re-elected. Hooray, 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 because that's what we were hoping for, wasn't it? And what I think is even more important is the number of ballots that went up in favor of legalizing marijuana. Colorado, and I can't remember whether it was New Mexico or somewhere else. No, probably not. Maybe Washington. Yeah, Washington, I think. You can look it up. You can look it up. If you want facts, you don't come to the Dixon James podcast. You know that, don't you? Facts you get wherever you want to get them. But opinions you get here. And I'm of the opinion that it's a great thing. I'm just really disappointed. Fucking Canadians didn't have the balls to legalize pot before the Americans. Now, of course, it's going to run into some glitches. And, so, but I don't think the police are going to be asking too many more young people over little bags of weed. It's just so insane. And it's not insane. It's disgusting. It's so wrong that we've spent all this money and this time. And the fact that people went to jail for carrying pot. I'm not talking about people who, you know, shoot people and you know, load airplanes up full of stuff. I'm talking about the little guy who deals a little weed. Come on. There are bigger fish to fry. Speaking of which, I think they're trying to also outlaw the death penalty in other places. And same-sex marriages. I love to tell this stuff to my students who come from maybe more traditional environments. And I'm thinking, hey, don't you see that the Canada I went to school or grew up in, you know, is not the same Canada you have today. It's a better Canada today in oh so many ways, you know. You can argue that point, but certainly we've come a long way in terms of liberalizing our views, if there's such a verb. and a lot more tolerant, in particular over the issue of gay rights, and at least a growing awareness that bullying is bad, even though people are still doing it and people are still being driven to suicide. Last night, we know, more people know today that, hey, don't do that. It's stupid. It's wrong. But a lot of people have not quite caught up, and that's why I use my classrooms as much as possible as a staging area to say, hey, guess what? You know, not only was Obama re-elected, and what a time I had, but these other things are happening too. Anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked on that. Phil Harris, I mentioned. How many of you boys and girls out there know the name Phil Harris? Not many, I bet. You might know Phil Silvers. And every night, you know, when Sergeant Bilko came out, no?
I hugged and kissed her so.
Still not ringing a bell? I think it is. I think you know Sergeant Bilko. But Phil Harris was a singer, band leader, from the, mainly from the 40s into the 50s. Now, my parents used to have these on 45s. Now, I wish like hell I had somehow been around to save my parents' record collection, because I used to play these things as a little boy. And I knew all the words to all the songs. Like, I would just play, I guess, again. I had a working brain back then. I could remember lines, and I'd sing along with 44 Sycamore and Papa's Little Jug, and That's What I Like About the South. And every night, so I went on iTunes and bought one of his hits collection, and I'm going to share that with you now. And all this stems back to discovering those pictures of my old house in Valleyfield, Quebec. Remember last episode I'm talking about going back? Well, one of the things from my past, of course, is the music, and the music of my parents in particular. Now, these 45s came in a little box set, a little box the size of 45 RPM records, but there might be three or even five. I think usually it was three records in that little box, and they were often bright colored, like a beautiful bright yellow or red or blue, translucent. You could see through them. And I remember the thrill as a kid of picking up one of these 45s and looking at that gorgeous color. Oh, God, I wish we had those. They would have just, boom, gone out in the garbage with my parents. Left machine, moved to Ottawa, and I was, I don't know where I was when that happened. I was in Japan, or, yeah, probably. Or traveling through Europe with my wife at the time. And lost all those things, but I dredged up some memories by getting those, and I'm going to share a couple with you on this podcast, just to say, hey, this is how old I am, that my childhood is not, you know, music that you listen to from your parents' record collection. My parents' record collection goes back to the big band era. And there was also some cowboy music, and for the life of me, I can't recall right now the name of whoever it was I downloaded. And I can't even say for sure that I knew that person. I might peek in here a little bit, seems like it. Sorry. But the sound is exactly the sound we used to hear on the radio in Valleyfield. I grew up in a small town, so you're going to have cowboy music on the radio, you know, country stations. And to this day, I love country music. And I'm not talking about whiny Wynette, and, you know, a lot of modern people, but, you know, old traditional stuff with almost bluegrass and steel guitars and all the instruments that come up. So you're going to hear some of that, too. I'm just basically, this is going to be a podcast that's going to share some of my childhood with you through the music that I grew up with, that takes me back to that little house in Valleyfield. Not that little house, that big house in Valleyfield. And all those lost memories. So that's it. I just thought I'd get a start on this podcast. Take advantage of the setting sun, the end of a day. Thursday is my real hard day with two classes, and after this, I'm coasting. And my wife is still in Japan, but tomorrow, or actually very soon, she'll be on her way to Tokyo with number one son. And for a couple of days, and then I'll pick her up on Sunday. So we'll see. I don't think I will get this finished before then. But I did want to get a start now. So that's it, Scarborough Dude. Just a short clip to say, hey, Get up, Kate, aren't you happy that America once again voted in Barack Obama? But isn't it amazing how that country is divided? I mean, we're looking at real divisions, and I really do worry that, well, do I worry? Yeah, I feel that I want America to be successful and get back on its feet, and I'm really concerned that there's still such a division that a lot of people are not going to play nice, and they're going to play politics, and more people will suffer because of the pettiness, the selfishness, the pig-headedness of a number of people who really don't have the greater good in mind. But isn't that way? Isn't that the way it always is? Okay, signing out. We've just done enough. Yeah, I've been peeking. I'm sorry. And I'll get back to my car because fuck, it's starting to get cold. Jesus Christ. Once that sun goes down, boys, you know she's a whole new day. If you're gonna make a take care and you bye know you for got now. Right away, cause it's a good day for paying your bills, and it's a good day for curing your ills. So take a deep breath and throw away your pills, cause it's a good day from morning till night. It's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How can anything go wrong? A good day from morning till night. Oh, it's a good day for shining your shoes, and it's a good day for losing those blues. Everything to gain and nothing to lose, cause it's a good day from morning till night. Yes, I said to the sun, good morning, sun, rise and shine today. You know you've got to get going if you're gonna make a showing, and you know you've got the right of way, cause it's a good day for paying your bills. Yes, it's a good, good day for curing your ills. So take a deep breath and throw away your pills, cause it's a good day from morning till night. So good day and good night.
Of pollution in the world, it's the greatest producer of refugees, displaced people. It's the greatest source of starvation and illness. It is something that has to be repudiated, and that is what John McCrae was asking us to take up with the torch.
Now, I want to just bring Joanne back in here, because Joanne, there's another element to this, too, and that's the copyright infringement and the fact that the Legion believes this white poppy could be jeopardizing fundraising goals for the Red Poppy campaign. How significant is the Red Poppy when it comes to raising funds for Canadian veterans?
Very significant. You know, earlier it was mentioned that the poppy raises funds for all activities in the Legion. Well, that is absolutely not true. Poppy monies are extremely restricted for their use. They are there to assist our veterans, and they are current serving veterans or ex-serving personnel.
I'm going to talk over
their
this
families,
if you
don't
mind.
And it is so needed.
It's obviously the discussion on Remembrance Day.
Around that, we also allow
I wish I'd tuned in
like
just a minute earlier and heard more about the White Copy campaign, White Poppy campaign. I'm certainly against any further wars. We're going to have them where they're inevitable. They seem to be a part of the human condition. But at the same time, I really do respect the Remembrance Day coming up this Sunday.
She's a member of Canadian Voice of Women for Peace, and she was in Ottawa. Joanne Henderson is the Poppy Fund coordinator for the BC Yukon Commission.
I can understand the strong emotions if somebody thinks that a rival poppy is coming along to distort the message. I think I've never, ever thought of Remembrance Day as a celebration of war. Never, and I don't think that was ever the intention. It's always been to remember the horror, the sadness, the tragedy Gosh, you know, I was listening to Slugger's Doug, and I thought, you know, I woke up, wow, Friday is always a good day for podcasting, because I got so many. There's a new Transpondency from Adam Greatrix, always a new Norm Augustinus from on Friday, another, of course, Macworld. I listen to those, you know, because I really want to get that new iMac. And then, of course, Vinyl Countdown, or Keith McNally, anyway. He's got something out there. We were recording last night. And, you know, Anthony Marco, Love Hate Things. And there's just a slew of my favorites that, you know, I uploaded onto my iPod today. Still using my iPod, even with the iPhone and the iPad. I use my iPod for listening to my podcast, and it works beautifully plugging it in my car here. But I just decided, all right, I'm going to stop Doug, I'm going to turn on the radio, and then suddenly we're talking about war instead of the beauty of, Buffers Park. But that's how it is, we're really affected by what's around you. Speaking of which, just before I left the house, it's 10 in the morning on a Friday, by the way, if you need to know that. I was watching a movie with, I had his name, Robert somebody. He was the star of an old television show, Father Knows Best. And I watched that as a kid. You know, my whole family did, because those were the days of family television, 1950s, you know. And he had, a suburban, middle-class white male, not unlike my own family. In fact, there were three children. There was Betty, the eldest daughter, who I really didn't like. Perhaps she reminded me of my sister. I don't know. Not a nice thing to say. And I don't mean that, dear sister. In a bad way, you know, you've been good to me. You've given me a lot of support through the years. I just want to put that out there in case you ever happen to listen again to a Dixon Jane's podcast. But, you know, hey, I was a kid back then, you know. Older, bigger sisters were, I don't know, bossy. But I only liked Bud. Bud was the son, and Bud would do bad things like, he was a bit like Wally on Leave It to Beaver, although Wally was the good guy. And Kathy, who I couldn't stand, the daughter. And that's because, well, she was the youngest, and, you know, equivalent to me, I was the youngest in my family. So, anyway, watching this show with this man, and it was a movie of him looking back on his life. He's sort of now middle-aged and in his office and routine and married and just not happy about how time has gone. They've been married for 20 years. They're just stuck in the suburbs. She's got her social events, and he's going off to the office, and suddenly he realized something's really missing from my life, you know? And it was a bit haunting, because the flashbacks had him as a youthful man out playing in the snow, falling in love, and the excitement of being young, and, you know, the way your life is, and then as you get older, it just becomes dull and routine and boring, and you think, is this really what it's all about? In fact, he asked that question at the breakfast table, like he just wanted to get in the car and run away, you know, is this what it all adds up to? And it made me real feely happy, you know, you can figure that one out, that I don't have regrets in my life. I'm thrilled the way it turned out. I'm happy right now at this stage to have a house in the suburbs and this stability in my life, and a job I go off to, which more or less I enjoy, even though I bitch about the students a lot, and the work, and the marking, because I did all those other things in the past, like running off to Japan, like all the other stuff. Now, I'm not saying that to brag, I'm just saying that when I looked at that man, and I could feel the sadness of looking back at a life and figure, who did I live this life for? So that's a tip for anybody younger and still in control and still able to make decisions and not completely trapped by the circumstances of life. Holy fuck, you want to do something, get the fuck out there and do it, because you'll be dead before you know it. Yeah, okay, put that one out of the way. There was another theme, the house in Valleyfield, which again I woke up thinking about. And I think it was watching that movie. There was a scene they had a maid, and there was a little room off the dining room, which where they kept the dishes and she'd bring in the food from. And that house we had in Valleyfield was designed for servants.
And there was a pantry, and it was the coolest, coolest little room between the kitchen and the dining room. So he had this very big kitchen that, you know, the original inhabitants of that house, I told you it was 100 years old. Go back and listen, for Christ's sake. There's even a picture posted. That would have been just for the cooks. And then off that, a little pantry full of cupboards and things. And that was so neat. I remember finding my teddy bears there, and there was a plastic toy called Treacle, a little monkey that climbed up this string. And it was just a place where I think my parents just put stuff. There was the big funny hat that my father had missed. What was it? Oh, gosh. And one of his friends would put it on, and you'd just laugh. It was a giant checkered hat that, like, a clown would wear. We had a nickname for anybody who put that hat on. And there was a fake nose and glasses that went with it. Just something funny. Gosh, would I ever love to have that hat now. Holy shit. I'd wear it to every PodCamp event. Who the fuck is that asshole? What a show-off. Yeah. Anyway, and the other side of the pantry looked out into the dining room, so there'd be like a little sliding door, and you could peek out, so the servants could look out and see if, you know, somebody was ringing a bell, or, you know, their wine was half empty or something, you'd have to run out. So, but it was just, as a kid, it was just a cool little secret room to go into the pantry. And in that same kitchen, there was a back staircase, there was the main front staircase, you know, like you'd see great big things that turned, and there'd be a landing and then another level up to the top floor. But there was a back staircase, which again the servants would have used, and we used it basically, I think my mother used it to throw the laundry down if there was laundry, you know, in a laundry bag. We did have a house cleaner, of course, but the laundry would be thrown down that back staircase. And it was another neat little thing, because you could come down the back staircase, and there were windows. I don't know why there were windows in it. And you could peek through the windows into the kitchen. And then off the kitchen, there was another little storage area. And it just is coming back to me. Because I'm in that house right now as I'm talking to you. I am in those rooms. I am picturing it so vividly. I left there when I was 8, but I could walk, you know, step for step through that house now. And there was an old fire extinguisher. And I don't know who set it up. I have the feeling I was responsible because I was certainly there. And it was a tall red one with a black funnel-shaped hose, like a real old fire extinguisher, probably from the 40s or earlier. And somebody knocked it over and it went off and this white smoke came pouring out of this thing. And, of course, it was kind of scary. Maybe that's why. Holy shit. Maybe that's why I had those nightmares, because there was a nightmare about a little bit of gas. I had a few recurring dreams when I was a kid. I haven't had them since, but, I mean, I'm talking about really frightening recurring dreams. Now, maybe it's tied to that. And, of course, off that, there was another little veranda in the back. It was an amazing, amazing home. But I guess I'm telling you all this because I've said on previous shows, I can't go back into the past. I'm always caught up with, oh, I got to do marking today. And now I'm kind of having fun. Since that picture was posted of the house in Valleyfield, I'm having fun going back there and just thinking, oh, that we had trees all over the property, of course. And playing in the mud around the trees, around the tree roots and so on, with dinky toys. It was before. I didn't have Matchbox toys to move to Lachine. Dinky toys are what you had, bigger ones. And then just the plastic soldiers. I remember nights you could go down to the, it was called the 5 and 10 cent store. I think it was before Woolworths, but maybe it was a Woolworths in Valleyfield. And that's where you just had all these toys you could buy. And if you had a 10 cent allowance, 25 cent allowance, holy shit, that was a lot of money. You could just buy stuff. There were little shops down the street where they gave you little brown paper bags and you could buy black balls and all the other candies, you know, for pennies and nickels. The comic book store, there was two, like, little stores before all the chain variety stores, before the Max Milks and so on. And the other one was O'Neill's, and O'Neill's was where you got your comic books. And Mr. O'Neill had figured out a scam where All he had to do for the comics that weren't sold was cut off the top half with the date and the logo of the Dell or whatever, the DC, whatever, and send that back to the publisher or the supplier, whoever it was, and he'd get credited. And then he would sell the comic book with the top half of the cover missing for half price. So you'd buy a couple of those, you know. But Valleyfield. Just being a child, in that world of being a child, how long the seasons lasted. I'm going to move you up. I'm going to go up to Lachine. Again, it was from the same movie I was watching with Robert. Damn, what is his name? Robert never became a super big star, but was in movies and then really did well on this TV show, Father Knows Best. The house we had in Lachine when we finally moved in 19... Well, I guess that'd be 58. Probably left Valleyfield 57, 56, yeah, 57. 58, 59, we're in Lachine, and we've got a house, and it had a big oak tree in the front of the house. And it was lovely, and there were squirrels that lived in it. And, like, that seemed a rare thing back then. And we had names for them. There was Tippy and Timmy. And they would come down, and we'd actually feed them, and they were like Petsy. And you'd put a little peanut butter on your shoulder, and the squirrel would come down and run up and climb you up. Nobody was afraid of fucking rabies or anything, or, oh, my God, these things are going to bite, or anything else. And I thought of that because these were sort of the gray squirrels that you don't see much, because the black squirrels have just completely overrun everywhere. And that also made me a little bit sad. What's happened? You know, there's these invasions of species, of plants, of animals, and things change. That's the nature of life. By the way, I'm not in Bluffers Park. I'm parked outside the graveyard cemetery, St. Andrew's here, because it's sort of on the way to school. I decided I was going to go in. I woke up, and one last point here. I slept in today. I'm supposed to be, you know, up at 6:45 when the alarm goes, and I just slept right through it. And then 7 o'clock, bam, in the car with my son, driving him for 7:30 a.m. Friday class. Well, I get up in a panic. It's 8. Oh, my God. And I see a note on the floor. My son, don't wake me up. I'm not going. And, of course, I woke him up. And, you know, look, you've missed your class. Yeah, I know. I'm not going. I'm going to later on. And as a parent, you know, he's 20 years old. I can't get in there and wrestle with him. It's too late. We've missed the class already. And there's a time when you shrug your shoulders, but you're kind of pissed off. But you've got to let it go. It's not high school. It's not elementary school. It's not, Daddy, I'm sick. I'm not going to school. I'm just not fucking going to school, you know? And it means a lot, like you want them to, and you want your children to be perfect, and you know they can't be, and you know you bloody well weren't, and you think back when you were 20, oh my God, what I had to hide from my parents, and I'm just grateful to have my son at home, and more or less attending school, and knowing what he has to do, and so you just sort of, you kind of just have to let it go, but there's times in parents when you're caught in that kind of gray zone. The one voice comes up, well, you're supposed to be stern and give him hell. Well, I'm not happy about that. And then the other voice, what the fuck, you know, what can I do about it? Hey, you're living your life. You're going to eventually pay for it one way or the other, you know. Yeah, but it's hard. And those of you with little children, you want to have so much influence over them and be, you know, so... Oh, such a good dad or mom and do everything right and raise them up well and so on. And my kids are raised up well. They are good kids. They're not kids anymore. Now, by the way, my wife and son are in Tokyo now. My wife gets back. Today's Friday. She gets back Sunday. And so I've already planned a final pub run out with Brian. Not a final, but just one extra, you know. Ring of a bell while she's away with Brian. We're going to start on a Saturday afternoon. We're going to start off on Roncesvalles for a change, way out there on Dundas West, and maybe make our way into a bar that some of the boys from Vinyl Countdown haunt from time to time. I think it's run by a friend of theirs, and just, you know, for the hell of it, something different territory instead of the only. And anyway, you don't need to know that now, and I'm going to head off to work. I was going to try and get caught up on this Friday. Class doesn't start till 12:30. I was going to go in early and do stuff. Already, I've taken up 60 minutes and 54 seconds of your time. Oh, sharing with you when really all I want to do right now is go back to listening to Sluggish Doug. Thanks, Doug, for putting out that episode. And it's kind of funny because I was listening while you were talking, and suddenly I heard this little the sound of a tweet coming in. I said, "I bet you that's me." And sure enough, it was me tweeting you while you were down in Bluffers recording. It's pretty funny. And anyway, it's, again, the wonder, the joy, the happiness of connecting with all these different friends. At the same time, I'm celebrating real life. My cousin Zeke, I guess I've called him in the past, cousin Zeke, is in Regina and on his way to Vancouver. And he's a guy who came out there in the early 70s and just tore the roof off the place, really. I mean, he just let it all open. I hadn't known him since childhood, and suddenly I've got a drinking-age cousin who was a wild character at the time and lots of fun. And so now, of course, he's tamed. He's got a grown son and married and living in the country. And but anyway, well, his son works and was able to spring some free air tickets, so he's on his way to Vancouver now to stay with Barnacle Bill and meet up with the whole gang, what's left of it anyway. Of the crew that I hung out with in the 70s out in Vancouver. We were, for a while, we were known as the West End Gang because we all lived in rented high-rises in the West End. And we're notorious for getting really drunk and rowdy at parties. And so on. And like I say, I've lost three of those friends, three of the people from the original gang have all died. John the First, who died in the Czech Republic, and Then Richard A. Dott, who just died unnecessarily because he refused to go to a hospital or see a doctor. And the third one, Peter the Accountant, just from life of bad lifestyle, bad health, smoking, drinking, eating pizzas, and eventually just did him in. But three core characters we were with at all these parties, three of our group. Gone, all three, and all three of those, by coincidence, well, no, by the way it worked out, were all childhood friends as well. They were the West Coast group that we, the ex-Lachiners, joined up with. There were two gangs, right? We were the Lachine people who migrated west during the Great Exodus from Quebec in the 70s and met up with a gang who was already established out there. And what do you know? There were a lot of parties and a lot of fine traditions, like the Mother's Day camping weekend drunk, it used to be called. Now it's just a tame affair, but that's gone on for 20, 30 years. The Rock, of course, is all part of that legend. The Rock, I guess, will be on its way to Australia in December. But anyway, time's up. I got to go in and get caught up. So I just wanted to tell you, whatever it is I just told you, don't waste your life. Celebrate it. Make the most of it. There's the one thing in this movie, the guy was saying, why don't we just put aside all our responsibilities today, just pack the bags and go somewhere, get in the car and go somewhere. And God, I just relate to that feeling. And I thought it was wonderful that they would have made this movie from the 40s about that. It was against the backdrop of the war, you know, the horror, what was going on. So I should have stayed and watched the whole damn thing, but I felt, no, I got the point, I got the message, and I'm going to get out there and share it with you. But at essence, it was make the most of your life and don't live a life of regrets. Bye for now, and back to my podcasting. Thank you, boys and girls.
Bill Jackson was a poor old dub who joined the Docktown Poker Club, but cursed the day he told him he would join. His money used to go like it had wings. If he held queens, someone had kings, and each night he would contribute all his coin. Then he said, I'm gonna play him tight tonight. He said, to be no bobtail flushes make me bite, cause when I gets in there, my hands won't be a peach. Well, he played him tight, but lost his pile, and Bill got peevish after a while, so he rose, looked all around, and made this speech. He said, y'all see this brand new razor? I had it sharpened just the day. Now I'm coming in there with my rules that you must follow when you play. Now keep your big bony hands on the table while you're dealing, please. And don't be slipping them aces down there in between your knees. And don't be making all them funny signs like you're trying to tip off your hand just talking American, boy, American, so's I can understand. And don't be dealing off the bottom because, ooh, that's rough. Take five, five, then stop, that's enough. Now when you bet, put up the chips because I don't like it when you shy. Then if you get busted, go on out and get something. I'm gonna be your by and by. Pass them cards for me to shuffle every time before your deals. Then if anything's wrong, I must see. 'Cause I mean, you always ain't no luck. Keep playing that game according to Mr. Harley. You gonna play this game according to me. Sitting right there in that there clan, they chanced to be a one-eyed man, and Bill kept on watching him out of the corner of his eye. 'Cause old one-eye would deal, and then would cost that Bill another 5 or 10. Bill got up again, looked all around him with a sigh. He said, "Lord, this is an awful shame." He said, "There's someone cheating in this here game." He said, "Of course, it ain't no do for me to name the guy. So I'll refrain from mentioning the party's name. If I catch him cheating just once again, I'm gonna take my fist and close out of the eye. Now, do you see this brand new razor I had it sharpened just the day? I'm coming in there with my own rules that you must follow when you play. Egghead, keep your hands up there while you giving them out, please. Stop putting them wildies down there between your knees. Stop making all them funny signs like you're trying to tip off your hand. Keep talking in American, big A-A-A. That's what I can understand. And don't be getting them off the bottom, because I keep trying to tell you it's rough. This is the Army game. 5-5. Halt. That's enough. Now, when you bet, let me see the reds and blues, because I don't like it when you shy. Then if you run out of gas, go get pumped up. I'm going to be your by and by. Pass them pasteboards for me to shovel every time before you deal. Let me riffle. Anything wrong, I want to see. Because, I mean, you always ain't going to keep playing the game now, according to that Mr. Harley. You all going to play this game according to me. Henry, if you break the seal on that new deck of bicycles, we'll go on from here. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, you should be able to pick that up in the background. The sound of the waves coming here on Bluffer's Beach. I'm not in my usual spot. I've gone to the beach side, and it's lovely to see so many people. Boys and girls, it's November 11th, and happy birthday, Anthony Marco. Listen, I've just listened to your podcast, your reflective piece on this day, which coincides with Remembrance Day, as you discussed before. Very nice piece, Anthony, and glad to know you. Glad you're a part of my world through the odd time we ever meet in person, and especially through your podcasts. And anyway, it was a good piece, and I'm saving the closing song for my drive home. Just wanted to say that. I'm going to talk a little bit about Remembrance Day. And I think I'm probably going to give you two clips. It's Sunday, and I want to get this done. But first, I've just got to tell you about the scene in front of me. A man came with three dogs, and they're all mongrels, you know. But they are racing like hell across the beach from one end to the other. And it just had that sense of freedom, you know. You know, so often there are city bylaws on this and that, and some people are afraid of dogs. You can't let them run loose and so on. But it was just nice to be here when there are no bloody rules and the man can let his dogs run free. And they just were so happy. It's like they had just been cooped up in the basement or something, and suddenly they got the whole beach to go crazy on, chasing each other, running by the water. It's a beautiful thing, and I think it's a nice sense of the freedom that we believe that the soldiers, fallen soldiers we remember today, died for, fought for. I just, you know, they were saying, they used a term on the CBC. I watched the ceremony. I made a point of getting up, even though it was a very late night, I made a point of getting up to watch the Remembrance Day services from Ottawa on the CBC. And I got to tell you, for every wreath that was laid down, a tear came to my eye. It's sort of involuntary. It's just, you know, I don't know why in particular, but I'd read, say, for the Métis or for the veterans, for this group or that group. And, you know, each face, you just got teary-eyed. And I think that's the way it's supposed to be. They're commenting that there are just fewer and fewer of the ranks of the remaining soldiers from World War II or the Korean War are very, very thin right now. But this will continue. I think it's one tradition that absolutely must, above all else, continue. And let the poppy be the only symbol, and no commercialization around this special day. I don't know, people talk about it should be a national holiday, but I think it would just sort of, I don't know, people would just jump on that, the bars and everybody else, and I don't know if it's really the right thing. But anyway, I kind of wanted to, well, I don't know, let you know. I remember, as I say, I came down and I stood in silence in front of the television. I am blessed. I think Anthony went on this point about how just our lives, we do have so much to be grateful for. And to have lived one's entire life without war or hunger is something we should not forget and should appreciate and be grateful for, and maybe even going a little further. What is it that you can contribute to see that this spreads a little further, a little wider, a little deeper, so that others too can have the benefit of living without war? I decided it's a question. I give my students a little topic to write on. You know, it's a volunteer project every week, and they just send it by email into a Dropbox. And I'm going to ask, do you think it's possible for the world to have peace one day? And it's going to be a sort of a, if not, why not? And if yes, how can we do this? How can it come about? And I'd be very curious. I know some will go straight to religion and believe in God and so on. But I hope a couple think about it. At least I'm going to raise it as a discussion point in class. I do like having, as you know from listening to this podcast, I do like having, it's not really an audience, but people I feel I can put a message out to, a congregation. And sometimes we can turn our classes into congregations where, look, I got a message, and I think it's important you know this. I've become a little hard-ass towards the end of my term now, and delighting in telling students, no, you can't, I'm sorry you got a zero because you weren't here. There are no excuses. And it doesn't matter that your grandmother flew in from India today. Anyway, I guess I'm not very focused here on this time. I thought I had a lot to say about Remembrance Day, you know, in particular. But maybe not. Maybe not. So we'll switch. I'll do what Anthony called a left turn. And move on to last night. Something else I enjoy very much in life, and I think I'm pretty good at, is just mixing people up. And I don't mean confusing people, I just mean bringing people together and having them just interact and seeing what happens. And not in a morbid way, not in a nasty way, just in a very hopeful way, that people will talk to each other and laugh and smile. And so it was, last night was absolutely perfect in that respect, because I told Brian, look, Brian, as you know, is my drinking buddy, friend from Nigeria days, you know, more than 22 years now. And I'm just very grateful to have him in town as a regular Saturday night drinking pal. My wife would never want to go to any of the bars I want to go, and it's not so much that I'm neglecting her, but she's comfortable usually on a Saturday night at home. And I know that might seem wrong to some of you, or signs of a terrible broken down marriage, but that's not really the case. We have the freedom to do the things we like to do, and this is something that that I enjoy, and she knows Brian very well and knows this is important to me. So anyway, and she's in Japan, I'm picking her up in a couple of hours, okay? So I said, let's go out to Roncesvalles, the west end of the city, for a change, and went online and found a place called The Local, and it was a great little pub, and I hadn't been on Roncesvalles. Barnacle Bill lived there for a year, and he lived in Toronto, and so I hung out there, spent a bit of time, and but I hadn't been back for a very long time, and this is just off Dundas, and it's a great little local pub, and we had some supper and some very good beer, a Junction Ale, which I really liked. And it was kind of neat that I just sort of found it online, you know, okay, Roncesvalles Bars, and bam, this comes up, and they, you know, you can go straight to their blog, and or their website, and their beer menu, aha, that looks okay. So I was able to convince the lovely Lisa to join us by streetcar from where she lives, from her condo, So the three of us just had one of these wonderful conversations. And then we got into, before Lisa got there, a guy at the end of the bar who was turned out to be a, you know, who I figured to be some boring old guy, turned out to be a lot more interesting than Brian and I. And a musician, spent half his year in America, teaches musicology, is a golfer, guitar player, and just a wonderful story of just the fun of sitting at a bar talking to people. Maybe that's a reflection of Remembrance Day, too, that we could do this. There's no Gestapo going to walk through the door demanding to see our papers or anything, or nobody's really watching in that sense, you know? Anyway, we left there and walked to 1602 Dundas West, which is a bar managed by a guy called Elliot. And it's a very cool little place. Now, we walked in, and it was empty. I thought, oh, this doesn't look good. Like, there was just the three of us and then a couple of people at the end of the bar, and their taps weren't very cold. They said they only had Bows on tap, and she was almost recommending against it, but I said, no, give it to me anyway. And then as the evening went on, it just filled with people. So it's a new watering hole in Dundas West. And I think it's admirable when somebody creates a space where people want to come to. The prices are reasonable, and it was just packed by the time we left. And so three cheers to them for anybody who can come up. And they don't even have a name. It's just 1602 Dundas West. And, you know, to create something like that, that becomes alive with people, a hub, it's wonderful. So, and I'm really glad. But the other reason for going there, of course, is our good friend Keith McNally of the Vinyl Countdown, the chief of the Vinyl Countdown, lives across the street with other Keith and Craig. And so I figured, well, there's a chance, you know, if I play it nicely, drop a couple of hints starting the day before. And this is where I'm getting back to the skill of laying out the people meeting. He said, sure, you know. And so I'm sitting there at the bar, and it's getting full, and then suddenly I get a text message from some guy saying, hey, handsome, what are you doing at the end of the bar, or something like that, I don't know. And I look up, and there he's already sitting there with Brad, another guest on the Vinyl Countdown. And it was just so cool to be at one side of the bar and look across and see two familiar faces, and I think I'd already... I had stepped out in the street to have a little wee-wee-wee-wee-wee-willy. I don't mean I peed on the wall. I mean I had a toke, okay? And the nice thing about that toke was some guy was just going by and, hey, man, can I have some of that? And, you know, first reaction is, well, why not? And I just had the butt, and I apologized and gave it to him. He was a guy from Brazil, just a day laborer type of guy, and... we just enjoyed and talked about, hey, how wonderful it is to be free to stand on the street in Canada and share a joint without worrying about, you know, blaring sirens and guns and hands against the wall or anything else. So that's one more little theme I need to put in there. Talk about freedom. I want the freedom to smoke my weed, and it's not your fucking business, and I'm not hurting anybody. Get that straight, goddammit. Listen... Justin Trudeau, when you become head of the Liberal Party, the only way you're going to get in power and get my respect and get any bloody votes is to put firmly on your platform you are going to decriminalize marijuana and then go from there in terms of investigating how you're going to tax it and legalize it and so on. If you don't do that, man, oh man, I have lost every ounce of respect that I'm trying to give you. So that's one, okay? But anyway, it's just cool to raise your head, look up, and see this you know, cool guy at the end of the bar, you know. And I've been telling the lovely Lisa about him. And meanwhile, I'm texting Etobicoke Joe and saying, well, we're here. You know, he's at some party full of young Japanese. And how the hell do I get there? And it took him forever to come across town on a streetcar. But he shows up. So suddenly you've got this hub of people. And then I go over and... suddenly I'm between Brad and Keith and having a conversation. I know. This is painfully boring to listen to. I'm sorry, but I just... How do you describe a night? It's not, hey, I had a great time. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to say the importance of human interactions, the joy, the simple pleasure of just talking with people, knowing people. And then the high of... Keith giving up his chair, I sit and get into a very long conversation with Brad. There are no others with Brad. And Keith goes over and I watch him introducing himself to Brian and to Lisa and Etobicoke Joe, and then I watch Brian, you know, as he talks to Brad when we switch places again, and talking to the girls beside him, and just this whole interaction of people, and there's a sense of accomplishment, of having done something, okay? Maybe that's what I'm getting at. I did that. I arranged that. I told Brian, hey, let's try a different part of town. I contacted Lisa using, this is all with the use of the internet. Let's throw that in there, too, for the people, for the doubters, to say, oh, well, it makes people, you know, kind of withdrawn, and then they just hang out in their basement. No, you fucking asshole, it does not. It gives you an opportunity to reach people on the move, you know? Like, everybody's out and about town, bam, you just tweet, you just text, you just send messages. Here I am, we're here, come on over. And you got this gathering, this interaction of new people talking to new people who they may never meet again, or they may, you know, and it doesn't really matter. It's alive now. You've created this little bit of human interaction. I don't know. Maybe that means absolutely nothing to you, but I'm trying to say it means a whole lot to me. And I just think it's important, and it's always been, and that was the whole point. I mean, this is my life's work. I know I used that before, like, hey, you got life's work? Nobody else does. What the fuck's that all about? Dixon James, 20 years, four season year, 20 years of my life, I put out a newsletter every day. And what was the purpose of that newsletter? To join people together. Somebody, it was all in print. Somebody would send in a letter, a postcard, and eventually, this is pre-internet, email and everything else, and somebody would send in something, an odd copy, and put it in and lay it out in a newsletter format. Somebody else would react to somebody else, and then this got mailed out to 50 families around the world. And somebody would pick that up and read, oh, gee, here's this guy, someone, I don't know, Bruce Conway, a flute player in Victoria, BC, writing about this, and next thing you got Rob, who's out there in Singapore now, who's, you know, I met Bruce Conway because of Rob, and you got these new people coming in, and some of the originals balked. No, this is like a closed club. This is just like a high school reunion. You had to have been part of the club to join this. Fuck you, no. The whole point of Dixon James, the Dixon James Empire, the Dixon James Network, is joining people together. And I wonder if I'm ever going to take this a step further, because I've talked about it, my career, how do I, oh, dare I say, monetize this? How do I make this into something real? Like, how do I really make it bigger? I'm stopping right there because I'm shocked that I just said that. Do I really, I've had this when I get high sometimes. I think, yeah, I want to actually have this organization that people trust and join. It's all got to be people you trust and people who are not going to hurt you or steal from you, people you could have into your home. So how do you bring total strangers in and mix them together and let them feel safe and at ease? And is that not moving? Is that not one little way of making this a more peaceful world, of joining people together, of celebrating that let's shed our fear and our anxiety and let's drop our guard and let's be open and welcoming and let's care and celebrate the fact that we don't have to fear who is that man, what tribe is he, what papers is he carrying, what authority, what power does he have, but just say, hey, I'm just another human being, who are you? I know sometimes I'm not very clear when I express these things, but I see it. I'm just not finding the words because I've got a limited vocabulary to start with and I'm not very focused. But do you see what I'm getting at? And again, I'm backing down here. I'm not talking. Now, I don't want to make this any bigger. I'm just quite happy that you'd have an evening like last night. And you just, I guess you've got to be comfortable enough in yourself. And I think it does get easier as you get older. You do have fewer cares. You're not so worried about this or that. You just, you got nothing to lose in some ways, you know. All that sounds kind of dangerous, but we need to be less afraid. We need to be, open, and God, I say that, and then I know in another rant I'll be complaining about some damn religion or those people and this closed-mindedness, and I guess I still feel that way. There are
enemies of freedom out there. There are people who just want people to be regimented and to follow the rules and to obey. And I think that's the fucking thing we have to fight all the time. And whether it's a religion or a political system or a, just a harsh way of life that, you know, I guess I got a little too much of the Timothy Leary in me, because boy, does that man represent the freedom that I value and treasure and want more of. I guess there's my closing thought as we come on a 20-minute mark. I was saddened the other night as I read Timothy Leary that nobody's going to want my books. I've got this amazing library, and I don't, as I said, I don't care about the Beats, although I do have a great Beat collection as a whole, and it shouldn't be broken up. But the fact that I love Henry Miller, I can't say I love Timothy Leary. He's just a harder guy to love. I can love Henry Miller. I just deeply respect and care about and hold him in high esteem, Timothy Leary. And it saddens me that I don't think my children will want those books necessarily. My elder son may say, yeah, I'm interested, but will he ever have a home and a place, or will he just get lost in a move somewhere? And what is it that I can do with these books? And does it matter? Do I have to hang on to them? Should I just burn them all with me in a big funeral pyre? No. Maybe I'll have to. And it even got me back onto my Japanese teacups as we looked at the dates of the Korean War, 50 to 53, that these occupied Japan teacups after the war, that was sort of, those are something precious, and they're beautiful, and they're hand-painted, and they have value. Where do they go after I'm gone, right? There's too many open-ended things to think about. So I'm going to close here with that crazy, hey, do these pieces fit? You're going out last night, you're getting high, having a few beer, you're mixing people up, you're talking about teacups, you're talking about Remembrance Day. You're talking about this Dixon Jane's network of people and your old zine and what was the purpose behind it. You're talking about celebrating freedom. You're talking about how beautiful it is just to be sitting here on a picnic table just by the edge of the water of Lake Ontario here at Bluffers Beach, Bluffers Park Beach. Oh, sorry, that was a long ramble, but I had fun doing it. Because it's just, bam, push that button and start talking, boy. You just chase after those words. You just try and keep up with them, you know, because you throw a sentence out there. Holy fuck, I got to have more words to follow that. I got to tie that together somehow. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I care. I don't know if I did. And so what? That's the joy and the freedom that, to me, the Dixon Jane's podcast represents. This is my freedom, boys and girls. And I think Anthony talked about that, too, is one of the things that he celebrates as... just the joy of being able to podcast, sit before a mic and throw something out there. And that's what we're doing, and that's why I got a dirty big smile on my face right now. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Keith, for inviting me back to your place last night. That was fun. It was a very short time. I wish I could have stayed the whole night, but those damn fucking subways I got to catch to get home sort of curtails the evening when you live in the other end of town, and it just wasn't the night to say, oh, fuck it, I'll stay up all night. Take care, and stay tuned to the Dixon Jane podcast. There will be more. Bye for now.
Get with it, Mr. Ben. to move your body about. Get with it, oh, get with it, red hot rhythm now. Some like the song, some like the hop, but give me the shimmy or the eagle rock. Get with it, oh, get with it, red hot rhythm now. Gives you pep, makes you get him to chase those blues away. Try it once and here's what you will say. Oh, when your nights are long, you're feeling blue, put on your spats and your low cut shoes. Get with it, oh, get with it, red hot rhythm now.
Thank you.